Oh, she just ducked out. Oh, here she is. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to tonight's meeting, our first one for 2025. Belated Happy New Year to everyone. It's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday, the 20th of January, 2025, and welcome to those in the public gallery. The time being 5:30 p.m, I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are also live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with Council's policy, I'll ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started.
It has.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr Stewart, our Director of People and Finance, Mr Spinks. No, we don't. No, sorry, that's incorrect. Our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee. Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve. Our Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti. Our Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore. Our Senior Strategic Planner, Mr Stander. Our Media and Comms Advisor, Ms Adams. Our new Communications Officer, Mr Heather. Welcome to your first meeting. And our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. And we have apologies this evening from Councillor Bain, who is on a leave of absence. Now, just before we get into the agenda, there was we do have the appendices attached, but we didn't list in the agenda questions on the appendices. So I just wanted to seek the guidance of councillors when you'd like to deal with that. Normally we deal with that at the end or just before notices of motion. Are you happy if we still do that? Yep. Okay. All right. I'll have to remind myself that we do that when we're there. So we're on page one, confirmation of minutes, that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 23, held on the 16th of December 2024, be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop on the 6th of January in relation to the CEO's priorities. Turning now to page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? No. Thank you very much. And I beg your pardon, I didn't see your light.
That's all right.
Councillor Fox.
I want to declare an interest in the John Street Medical Centre because I'm a customer there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Will you be taking part in the debate?
Yes, I will. I won't be leaving.
Yep. Thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open? No, thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? Thank you. If you could just come to the microphone and state your name and the suburb in which you live, please.
Hello, Charles Biggins, Leslie Vale. I have some questions for the CEO. If councils are body corporate entities, as Section 19 of the Local Government Act says they are, then who are the membership of this body corporate entity?
The CEO.
Thank you for the question, Mr Biggins, and through you, Mayor. That's a question that I'll take on notice so I can get some advice from our legal team.
Does the payment of a rates notice qualify a landholder as a financial member of the Kingborough Council body corporate?
The CEO.
Through you again, Mayor. Likewise, I'll take that question on notice.
Are councillors fulfilling the role of body corporate directors elected by the paid-up membership of this municipality?
CEO.
I'll also take that question on notice, thank you.
Are only financial members of this body corporate entitled to move motions at the body corporate AGM and petition council by obtaining signatures of other financial members of the body corporate?
The CEO.
Thank you. I'll take that one on notice as well, please.
Did council use a floating charge across the fees, rates and charges as security for the $10 million in no interest for the first 5 years loans obtained from the state government?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor, I'll take that question on notice as well.
If council did use the rates base of its body corporate membership to secure loans, then it would be perfectly legal for council to raise those rates in order to meet its interest repayments instead of selling council assets. Yes or no?
CEO.
I think there was a question in there, but I'll take that on notice.
Is council still anticipating that the body corporate membership fees, their rates notices, will again increase by another 10% this financial year?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor, the council has not come up with a position to take to the public on the rates for next financial year.
Did council consider, when negotiating the transfer of valuable sports precinct land to the state government for the two high performance centres, that this would be an opportunity to ask for the $10 million debt to be wiped from the books? If not, why not?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor, I'll also take that question on notice.
Using the rates base to secure state government loans that the council was unable to pay back during the 5-year interest-free period and can now only service by perpetually raising the very rates base it used to secure the loans in the first place. Such a feedback loop is usually associated with a Ponzi scheme. How is this any different?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. I'll take that question on notice, but can you repeat the question in terms of, is the question how is council's rating different to a Ponzi scheme?
Using the rates base to secure state government loans that the council was unable to pay back during the 5-year interest-free period and can now only service by perpetually raising the rates base, is it used to secure the loans in the first place? Okay, that's assuming that I'm correct in my assertions in those questions you haven't answered up to date. Such a feedback loop is usually associated with a Ponzi scheme.
Thank you for that clarity.
Yeah, thank you. Through you, Mayor, we'll also take that question on notice.
I've previously raised questions in this chamber regarding the creation of an environmental regulatory grid on private property. I've also asked questions regarding council's own exposure to liability associated with protecting those environmental and biodiversity assets. Is it true that council nominated a third of the municipality for landscape conservation zoning in 2019?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, no, that's not correct.
Then what proportion of the municipality was nominated for conservation zoning in 2019?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, conservation zoning would suggest that it's for conserving land not to be used otherwise, so that would involve some of our environmental management zones. We would need to see the data on that, what would qualify for that.
nominations were made. Is it true that council priority vegetation overlay covers some 90% of the private land outside of the urban town boundaries?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we would need to look at the data to get an answer on that. Take it on notice.
Thank you. Is it true that Council last year amended the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme to incorporate the latest version of its own biodiversity offset policy, a policy that includes financial offsets between $40,000 and $80,000 per hectare for the loss of priority vegetation?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, it came through this chamber, the Council has voted on that and the planning scheme was updated, is that correct?
Is it true that Council drafted its own trees on private land by law, which includes on-the-spot fines for several thousand dollars for landowners who are caught removing trees on their own private property without a Council permit?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, I don't understand the term, did Council draft their own trees? I think the question's asking about whether there was any financial penalties for vegetation removal last year, and there were financial penalties for illegal works that also included vegetation removal.
Did Council draft a trees on private land bylaw?
Ms. Tullamore. CEO.
Through you, Mayor, the bylaw is being revisited. It's not in my area.
Sorry. Ms. Chakoudi.
Through you, Mayor. There is a drafted bylaw. It's not enacted at the moment and it requires council endorsement before it will become active.
It went out to public consultation, so we all know that it's that it was.
Correct.
Did the draft include on-the-spot fines of several thousand dollars for landowners who are caught removing trees on their own property without a council permit?
Ms. Chakoudi.
Through you, Mayor. I'm unaware of the exact detail. I'll take that on notice.
Is it true that council It's still Council's intention to bring a version of the trees on private land bylaw into effect in 2025.
Ms. Chakoudi.
Through you, Mayor, the draft bylaw has been presented to elected members in a workshop. There will be more work required in terms of its review, and it will be up to the elected members as to whether that draft bylaw is endorsed in chambers.
Is it true that Council accepts no liability for the risks associated with maintaining a biodiversity-rich environment on private land?
Ms. Chakoudi.
Through you, Mayor, I'm not sure I understand the question. Need to take some time to answer that and I'll take it on notice. Thank you.
Do you have a further question, Mr.
Yeah.
Biggins?
Is it true that Council's own bushfire management strategy limits the scope of Council's mitigation actions to Council's own reserves that make up only 3% of the municipality?
CEO.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Biggins. Through the Mayor, we'll also take that question on notice.
Well, it stated as such in the annual report. Is it true that in 2025, of all the municipalities across Australia, Kingborough has the largest population at extreme risk of harm from a bushfire event?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Again, we'll take that question on notice. Thank you.
Is it true that in spite of Council having the authority to cause the creation of fire breaks on private and public land under the Local Government Act, this council has no strategic fire breaks surrounding the urban areas of Kingborough that emergency services could use for backburning operations in the event that those urban areas are threatened by a bushfire.
CEO.
Through you, Mayor, we'll take that question on notice.
In the annual report, I did see that Council was successful in the TFS pilot grants program for fire breaks. I noted that Cartwright Reserve was being upgraded to a registered fire break. Was that through the TFS's pilot grants program?
Ms. Chikuti.
Through you, Mayor, I believe that is the case, but I'll take it on notice to confirm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any further questions from anyone in the public gallery? No, thank you. That takes us to questions on notice from the public. We had three in the first one in relation to LPS exhibition process from Mr. Elcock with a response from Ms. Tyler Moore. The second one in relation to public display of Christmas decorations from Mr. Mitchell with a response from Ms. Chikuti. And the last one on planning department staffing levels from Mr. Jared Knightley with a response from Ms. Chikuti. If you do wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Takes us to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? No? Thank you very much. Questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from councillors. Open session of council now adjourns at 5:47 and planning authority commences at 5:47 p.m. We are on, I've got a page number, I'm not sure what page we're on, page 5. Officers' reports to Planning Authority. Proposed amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 to rezone land at 26 Crescent Drive and 21 Gamella Road, Margate, with a recommendation on page 17. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Yes, this proposal is for an amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme. It's rezoning a parcel of land in Margate from rural resource to general residential. We know that Margate is a growing community. We also know that there are a lot of strategies that this proposal is aligned with. So there's the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy. We have the Kingborough Land Use Strategy, Kingborough Council's Strategic Plan, and the 30-year Greater Hobart Plan. So this proposal is ticking quite a few of those strategic boxes. I did have a few questions around the flood study, but I think considering that we're just discussing tonight the rezoning rather than an actual development application, those questions may not be relevant, but it does say here that while more detailed flood modelling is required to determine how flooding will affect future development on the site and impacts downstream, the proposed rezoning can proceed as the proposed specific area plan provides the means to address flooding part of the future subdivision design. So I think at that point that's when we ask all those questions, but it is good to know that that is already being considered. I note that this proposal adheres to all the statutory compliance. There will be an exhibition period. So all in all, I'm happy to support the recommendation. I see this as being a great benefit to the Margate community. I'm happy to support. Thanks.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Street and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm broadly supportive of the motion before council. I do just have one query that I'm hoping staff might be able to assist with, and just a brief explanation of how this amendment or potential amendment interacts with the assessment of the new local provision schedule under the statewide planning scheme that's also ongoing at the same time, given that this is an amendment to the current planning scheme and we're looking to, in the not-too-distant future, have adopted a new LPS and planning scheme.
Mr. Stander.
Thank you for the question. Through you, Mayor, yes, we are running this process concurrently with the LPS process, so the Tasmanian Planning Commission is aware of this proposal. Given the timing of this proposal, it is very likely that the Commission will actually consider this application of this proposal together with the LPS around about the same time. It's more likely that this proposal, if supported tonight and goes through the process, will be approved by the Commission, which then gives them the opportunity to transition it to the LPS as part of that process. So it's really good timing for this application to deal with that. The Commission can consider the zoning that is being proposed, but also the zoning that's being proposed for Margate, the broader Margate, through the LPS. So timing is essential, so I think it worked out quite good in terms of the processing.
Councillor Street.
No, that's all from me. Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Street, because that was part of my questions as well. So maybe just following on from that, and mine are more around the SAP then. If maybe officers could explain, therefore, that the SAP will also then have to move over and it would actually increase the number of SAPs we have in our package to the TPC. Is that correct?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor, that's correct. So it will. I think the SAP is being proposed really to assist the applicant in dealing with a number of matters that can only be resolved at a subdivision stage. So in principle, the rezoning is supported, but the SAP is essentially acknowledging there's further work that needs to be done. So it is not trying to introduce new controls or anything like that. It's basically building on existing provisions in the planning scheme and bringing it forward to deal with at a subdivision stage.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Could you or another officer explain why the SAP needs to be in there and why it needs to achieve can't be managed under the standard provisions of the new or the upcoming Tasmanian planning scheme? State planning provisions, I should say. I'll correct that.
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor. So it is quite it's quite problematic in the sense that when we look at rezoning, we can't condition rezoning applications. There's no ability under the Act to say to a developer, yes, we want to rezone land, but we want you to look at this and this as part of the subdivision provisions. The SAP allows us to do that, so it's a unique way of trying to deal and to work with the developer to get a good outcome, not just for the site, but for the community. So if you look at the provisions in the SAP, it is really talking about trying to get a development on the ground that is connected to the surrounding neighbourhood, but also is providing public open space through areas through the site where it's appropriate, dealing with flood issues and so forth. So it's more a strategic approach to deal with that. If council did not suggest the SAP, which the developer agreed to, then there would be, I guess, it would be problematic to deal with the rezoning, and most probably put us in a situation where a rezoning application most probably will have to be delayed until those issues are addressed. So this is really providing a fast-track process to bring the rezoning forward.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Could you explain why not including the SAP would cause delays?
Through you, Mayor. There's a number of reasons. I guess one of the most significant reasons is the flood study. So we require a more detailed flood study. It is something that the developer or the landowner is willing to do. But I guess the SAP is providing a mechanism where we can indicate that we support the rezoning of the land. It's consistent with our broader land use strategies. So it provides the developer with a bit of security to say, hey, I can invest money in further flood studies and subdivision design. So it is once again preempting. There might be some matters that need to be discussed, but it's bringing the rezoning forward.
Councillor Antoli.
I had a follow-up question that just popped out of my head. Thank you. I've just remembered it. So are you saying that under the state planning provisions, a flood study cannot be assessed, included, or evaluated without a SAP?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor, no, that's not the case. So the flood codes that we have under the Tasmanian Planning Scheme will still be there. The big question with rezoning is always, is this land appropriate to be rezoned? And what you generally need to address through a rezoning application is all the hazards. So whether it's bushfire and flooding, you need to address those in detail. However, the developer, we've spoken with the developer, and he's willing to undertake that work, but, you know, I guess it's getting the rezoning across the line. So there's no point in trying to invest in further studies if the rezoning is not going to go ahead. So there's just delaying some of those requirements till subdivision stage, but making it clear what council's expectation is up front. So it provides the developer with a bit of security. This is council's expectation. This is what council want to see in the future subdivision. And those provisions are all there to ensure good community outcomes. So it's bringing some of those requirements forward so it's not a surprise later on.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. My concern is that the developer is not given so many restrictions that it actually makes the development non-commercial given the current costs that we find ourselves in to develop. So there's a certain amount of square meterage that the developer needs to make it worth his or her while to develop. And I would hate to see a SAP so onerous that he or she hasn't signed up to yet or seen, because it hasn't been created, that it would actually cause such a large amount of the area, which quite frankly, the whole area is relatively dense, that it would be so much, shall we say, open space is created, as one example, that it doesn't make the development viable. So how do we have some sort of a guarantee that we don't actually place the developer in such a position that it never goes through?
Mr. Stander.
Through Mayor, I can advise that we actually did talk to the developer about the SAP. So the draft SAP was actually provided to the developer and his consultants to have a look at. So it's been provided to the developer as a solution to deal with the application. So they're fully aware of the draft, they've seen it. If there are components of the SAP that they're not satisfied with or have issues with, they will have the opportunity during the exhibition process to provide a submission to council to consider that. The advice that I got from the applicant, preliminary advice, is that they're generally supportive of the SAP. They understand what council's trying to do through that. So I think it's not something that we would present to council if we didn't have the support from the developer in principle.
Mm-hmm.
And
if I may, and are SAPs typically, do they need to be approved by council before they're actually ratified?
Mr. Stander.
Through your Mayor, it's like any planning scheme amendment that needs to come through council. So council first need to initiate it, then it goes through a public consultation period, it comes back to council to consider those representations,
right,
and then it goes to the commission.
Thank you. That's all my questions for now. Thank you, Mayor. Thanks, staff.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Fox, I had next, and then Councillor Cordova, and then Councillor Midgley.
When I saw this application, I thought my main concern is really that it's so close to an industrial, light industrial zone, and I'm aware that there is a possibility under the SAP to create various sized lots. And I'm just wondering whether what other mitigation council might be able to provide in order to protect the industrial zone from noise complaints or other complaints in the future?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that's correct. So the SAP, first of all, is requiring a master plan approach. So that gives the opportunity for the developer to come sit down with council, and we have a look at the potential to subdivide the land, have a look at the lot yield, have a look at the public open space that we require, have a look at the flood issues, and then we also look at land use conflicts. So that the specific area plan is requiring a master plan that considers the implications on the industrial land that we want to protect, and there's specific provisions in there that is essentially requiring one or two things. It's requiring a buffer next to the industrial land, through some setbacks, or as an alternative, it is encouraging larger lots next to the industrial land. So it's giving that level of flexibility. And if you go through the controls, you will see that a lot of the controls actually comes down to flexibility. It depends on what the design is going to be.
Nothing further, Councillor Fox. Then next I had Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. And that was good to hear those last answers. I do particularly support that master planning approach. I think having that strategic angle rather than ad hoc development obviously paves the way for better community outcomes. I've got a couple of questions around, the two elements that I'm quite interested in are the flood study and also the trees, the high conservation value trees. So in terms of the flood study, I'm looking at page 13, 8.4, the quote is, while more detailed flood modelling is required to determine how flooding will affect future development on the site and impacts downstream, the proposed rezoning can proceed as the proposed SAP provides the means to address flooding as part of a future subdivision design. Am I right to understand that that therefore means that the public consultation that comes with this won't have the benefit of whatever that detailed flood study might be? And do you think that... Is the opinion of the council at all that kind of impinges upon the public consultation process a little bit? Because from my mind, if the public isn't given the access to that, whatever that more detailed flood study looks like, doesn't that kind of somehow compromise the public consultation process?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor. So what the SAP requires is for developer, once they do their subdivision design, to undertake that further study. So the preliminary flood studies that we received indicate that the highest risk is actually along the water buffer area, the creek area, and that is the developer's intention to actually utilise that, to mitigate flood issues, but also to provide public open space. So with any other normal development application for subdivision, it is required to go through advertising period. So at that point in time when we get there, when the lot application, it will go through a consultation process where it will be the master plan, the subdivision, and any supporting studies will be provided. So this application is really a high level, in principle, support for urban expansion to happen there through the zoning, and it provides a master plan or a SAP that kind of indicates council's strategic approach to the site. So it gives the developer a bit of security, but they will still have to go through the normal application process and deal with those matters. It's just kind of providing upfront our expectation, make it very clear what the expectation is from council.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. That's comforting to hear. So if I understand correctly, that almost means that the public, in a way, gets kind of two bites of the apple in the sense that we get this high-level public consultation now about just the intention in general to have a SAP here and to have a different use of the land than it currently is being deployed for. And then when whatever the master plan ends up looking like, then the public will get another chance to have their say on what that looks like. That's great. So when it comes to the trees, the high conservation value trees, I'm interested to know what were the kind of on-site environmental assessments that took place. And particularly, I guess what I'm interested in really is, so it's a 13-hectare site, and with that waterway buffer, it actually sounded quite encouraging from the way that the report's written, particularly where it says that the waterway buffer will provide One of the things that it has to provide is a practical pedestrian walkway and linkage through the site. So I'm interested to know in the high conservation value trees, so what were the environmental assessments that took place on site? But then I'm quite interested to know who is going to design or develop those pedestrian linkages and through the waterway buffer, because I'm picturing like pedestrian linkages through public open space that might look quite nice. I don't know, but I'm just want more detail. Thanks.
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor, that's a good question. So the applicant did provide a natural values assessment up front that identified those trees. What the SAP is really trying to do and is actually simplifying the current biodiversity code by refining the mapping, and it's basically the mapping in the SAP identify the areas where we want special consideration. What the controls in the SAP is really requiring is to say, well, try and protect these trees, and if you provide these trees, provide that within the waterway buffer, and consider that in conjunction with how you provide your public open space. So it's trying to do a number of things at the same time. What it is, in a nutshell, what it's trying to do is to maintain the natural flow of stormwater and flooding through the site, but also utilising that as a feature within the site to provide public open space and then your pedestrian connectivities and so forth. So it's not something that the developer will do by themselves. It's something that they will do in consultation with council at that stage. And that is the main aim, really, of this specific area plan, is to try and encourage that upfront discussion instead of just providing an application to council and taking it through the normal process. So the intent is to try and deal with those issues up front before a developer spent too much time on reports and so forth.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. I'll just conclude my remarks, Mayor, by saying that I think that it's good that we're taking that strategic approach, as I said at the front, maintaining that natural flow path of Tramway Creek and hopefully incorporating pedestrian access and elements that are good for community building as well. I think that's going to be important. Hopefully this type of methodology will be a good precedent. I'm sure we already do it in many ways, in many iterations, but it's a good way to approach these things so that we can get good community outcomes and also, with careful planning, make sure that we don't completely compromise the natural values of the site. So we recognise that development does have to happen, and it can happen in a kind of environmentally sensitive way, but that does require good planning at the start. So I realise it's early days yet, but this is a good methodology to go forward. So I am going to be voting in favour of this. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordover. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and thanks to my colleagues for the great questions, some that I had thought about, and I do agree following Councillor Cordover's comments regarding the specific area plan and the master plan and officers' response that it is a really important part of inclusion in this amendment with good, hopefully good planning outcomes. A further question regarding the high conservation trees. There is reference that the SAP will include minimise, sort of mitigate, but at all can we make the language a bit more definite to protect those?
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Mayor. I'm gonna try and answer this and look at my manager if she wants to add something to my answer. Look, from my point of view, the controls, the vegetation controls that we have in the SAP is not that dissimilar from the provisions that we have in the biodiversity code. So it's essentially saying try and accommodate existing vegetation in the development, and where you can't, you know, there's alternative pathways, whether it's through offsets. But essentially what the SAP is requiring, and it's quite explicit, that as a starting point, the intention would be to try and incorporate those trees within the public open space network, and then to look at the balance of those trees and to see how you deal with that through the subdivision design. So it's really focusing on that public open space and the connectivity through the site.
Thank you. Thanks.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Another question regarding the reference to housing types. It states there'll be a range of housing types. Does that mean social and affordable? And if not, have we had a discussion with Homes Tasmania, I guess, around some future land developments across Kingborough? And is there any leverage we can pull there to inclusion of that?
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the application is only for the rezoning, not for the development, so it's limited in what we can put as... We can't put conditions on there per se. I guess in a SAP you would have the ability potentially to incorporate housing types or affordable housing, but that would be up to whether the Planning Commission would accept that, and I would probably err on that they're less likely to require that or allow that to be required through the SAP. So we obviously write the SAP, but they have to approve the content of it, and I think it's unlikely that they would... to do that doesn't mean we can't. It doesn't mean also that the developer can't take it upon themselves to provide that type of housing or go into partnership with someone like Homes Tasmania or a private housing company. No, council hasn't approached them for this application. We're still in the early stages of rezoning, so it'd be premature to have any of those discussions. We do have discussions from time to time with the state government about sites that we identify that are suitable, and they do reach out to the councils and say, have you got land we can build some more houses on? So that's to do with land that we own, and occasionally we might see land that we think is suitable for them, which we have flagged with them, whether they pursue that or not. We're in the dark about that. So certainly the developer could go through that approach if they wanted.
Great, thank you. And a further question regarding the master plan. So it's great to see that there's an inclusion of a master plan. Will that specific master plan come to community for consultation or council? What's the sort of process regarding that?
Mr. Stander.
Through your Mayor, it will form part of the subdivision application. So it will come to council once the application for subdivision is lodged. We talk about a master plan approach, but it's really facilitating subdivision when they sit down, the developer or landowner sit down and do the subdivision design. We want them to consider a number of matters that's not always required through just a normal subdivision process. So it will be the same time when that is presented to council.
Councillor Midgley. No? Any further discussions? No? Councillor Gladewright, did you... want to sum up? No? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 39, DA 2024-239, development application for 7 warehouses, 2 showrooms and associated works at Kingston Town, 37 to 59 Maranal Road, Kingston, and adjoining Council Road Reserve, with a recommendation on page 63. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A mover in Councillor Gladewright and a seconder in Councillor Cordova. Councillor Gladewright.
Yes, as you just said, this proposal is for 7 warehouses and 2 showrooms. What can I say? There were 3 representations. My reading of the report, it seems that the responses given were adequate in addressing the concerns. A lot of the responses came back to the fact that the land is zoned general business, which allows for this type of proposal. I think it's encouraging to see that businesses want to operate here, so I think it's a positive thing. I note that there are 24 conditions and 5 advice clauses, and I'm happy to support this.
Thank you. Further discussion? While you're contemplating that, I just had a question. I couldn't see in the conditions that there was anything in relation to the provision that we've included in various commercial developments for the removal of graffiti by the property owners in the event that that sort of vandalism takes place. Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, I think that's a sensible condition, but the councillors have voted that off previous planning permits, so we have followed that and not put it on this application.
So So
can you repeat that, Mayor? I was just sidetracked by the smell of cigarette coming out the window, I think. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I can smell that now too. No, I just asked why there was no condition for the property owner to remove graffiti from the building. It's just that we now have a graffiti removal guidelines, and I thought that included the provision that in all development applications moving forward, that advice would be included.
And through you, Mayor, if the councillors would like, I'm not aware of the that policy change, but if councillors would like it added in, I can easily provide the wording.
Yeah, we would. I think given we have been spending a lot of time recently talking about graffiti removal, as there's been an increase in graffiti vandalism. I prefer to call it vandalism because that's exactly what it is. Throughout the municipality in recent times, and it does seem that commercial buildings, particularly where they're of this type of construction where they have big wall space available, are a particular target. And so I think it would be appropriate that we do put it on the owners, because one of the issues that we're having now is that because we haven't had that in the past, we're at the behest of the property owners now, whether they choose to clear off the graffiti or not. So it would be appropriate from now on in to ask property owners to have it removed, as we have done in the past in a number of applications.
I've shared the wording if it wants to be added in, but you'll need to move
I would need some. I can't move that from the chair, but I'd need somebody. No, you're the original mover of the motion, so thank you, Councillor Antoli. If you can move it, and then I'll just ask if it's acceptable to the mover and the seconder, which is Councillor Gladright.
Yes.
And Councillor Cordova, thank you. So this will become part of the substantive motion, and I believe we have the wording coming through to Mrs. Morton.
Through you, Mayor, for simplicity, it'd be easiest to add it as the last condition, yep, because a number of the conditions have referencing to other condition numbers, which means, yep, we have to then go through them all to work that out.
Yep.
So it can be the last one above Tazwater, so second last one, because Tazwater is always the last condition on our permits.
So it becomes, yep, 24. I suggest it is, Councillor Antoli.
It probably is.
Thank you very much. So that becomes part of the substantive recommendation. Councillor Fox, you have your light on.
I guess this is just an historical observation, but it's also a question in that this land that the proposal is proposing to develop. Originally, the Kingston Town Shopping Centre was deemed by council to be in conflict with the central business district of Kingston. And when Kingston Town expanded, they council very reluctantly allowed them to do so. And even though this land is zoned general business zone, I'm surprised that there have been no concerns raised about expanding this area, which is kind of non-conforming with the strategy of maintaining business in the central area. It's probably a bit late to raise this issue now, but I'm just wondering if staff have considered that issue, or if it's so long ago that the concerns might have been overlooked or forgotten about.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, when we consider a planning application, we need to consider the scheme at the time, and the scheme has said that this is zoned general business, so we are bound by the rules of the general business zoning that's there and unable to look at the past. There would be no ability for us to refuse it on a historic matter of what happened, which was before my time. So it's simply that it's in there and then we have to assess it under that. I agree, it is unusual. This site is unusual. It sits on its own up on a hill surrounded by residential uses and obviously the educational uses as well. It is what it is. The site is there. The site, in a general business zone sense, is, in our opinion, underdeveloped. It would make sense that that's better developed and improved on that site, and we've had discussions to that effect. So, because we need to obviously provide services, places of employment, and useful uses on the sites for our residential uses. So it sort of complements but doesn't take away from the activity centre. If it was trying to set up its own high street, if you like, then that would become more problematic. But given it's isolated and the way that it presents to the two street frontages, it's not likely to become a real competition to the principal activity centre being Kingston.
I'd like to say thank you very much for that explanation, and I'm pleased that the staff are aware of the issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just one question. I just wanted to address, I guess, the representations that came through three submissions opposing. And they're addressed, I think, quite adequately in the report, but I did want to just unpack a little bit about the traffic impact assessment and the notion that was raised in one representation around advocacy for separate turning lanes onto Maranoa Road would be helpful to safeguard a meaningful traffic flow on Maranoa Road itself. And the response on page 60, I think, was quite succinct. So I'm just hoping that we can get a bit more detail about what the traffic impact assessment said and maybe unpacking how we can allay the concerns of those residents around the traffic impact.
Ms. Tarlemore.
Through you, Mayor, without going directly to the actual report and pulling out the details of it, because I have read it, but I don't remember every detail in there. Essentially, the scale of this development on its own didn't warrant enough for that modification of the road. The road could cope with it. The matter for general safety and how the road's coping today is a matter for council to consider, the engineering services to consider, and obviously there might be a cumulative impact on the site over time. So should the site be developed with much bigger development, or if this was a bigger development, then it may warrant a need for modification of that road, including turning lanes, islands, lights, etc. But the traffic assessment, which was reviewed by our development engineers, was satisfied that it didn't warrant that kind of upgrade just for this development. But it's certainly something council engineering services would need to look at into the future, whether that's warranted and how they might go about dealing with that. And if it was in alignment with a bigger development on this site that increased that, or if the developer wanted to, it doesn't mean that there couldn't be a contribution from that site. But it would need to be worked out in detail.
Thank you,
Mayor. Just to conclude my remarks, whilst I do recognise and acknowledge the representations made, there were three of them, and I guess when I was thinking about this proposal and looking through the responses, which I found adequate by the planning officers, but also the notion that I think the somewhat intensification of activity at that site is, whilst, you know, there's, from some people's perspective, that's a bad thing, but from another perspective, it's good for economic activity, it's good for jobs, and it's good for, I think, both the business owners and the customers will really appreciate the development taking place, and it really is the right place for that type of development. So I think with all planning matters, it's always about horses for courses and the right thing at the right spot, and really I can think of no better place to have this type of thing. So I think even though there are three people or three submissions that made their views clear, and I do appreciate them taking the time to do that. And that's why I wanted to address it directly, to say that I acknowledge your concerns, but also I think that there will be more than those three representations out there in the community of people, the business owners and the customers, who will appreciate appropriate development going forward in that site. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I had a question just in regards to the Maranoa feature wall comment regarding that. Is there any way that we can ask the developer to consider like a public art mural or something? Just off on that.
Through you, Mayor, we wouldn't, for a site like this, we wouldn't specify in by way of condition that it had to be a mural. There's a lot of work that goes into mural negotiations, if you like, and it's not because of the work, it's just the obligation where the scheme calls it up. Certainly we have in the past worked with developers and got some great outcomes, the fast food takeaway places in the main street with the bird on the side of the Young's Table is a really good example where it was in that urban environment. There is a condition in the permit that asks for a treatment of that wall, so they may choose to consider a mural, knowing that what one person thinks looks great doesn't necessarily mean other people. It can be quite controversial in times. So that is something they could come back with. It's not something we'd specify. We think that'd be too onerous and too specific. Other treatments that they may do, they may use variation of materials, variation of colours, combination of materials and colours, you know, wooden battens, patches of dark grey, lighter grey, just so that it's not such a blank canvas. And also we note that we've got condition to landscape that frontage fairly heavily to try and reduce that visual impact, because it's not the ideal outcome having that blank wall there, but it's such an unusual site of the way it drops away. It just was impractical to try and get glazing at that bottom level. If it was an ordinary street, we wouldn't have really thick landscaping in front of it, because you can't see into the shop and all those sorts of things. So it's the best outcome for the site. On murals, the developer may choose to go down that path, and we would work with them if that was the case.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Any further discussion? Otherwise, I will ask the mover and seconder. So, Councillor Glade-Wright, did you want to sum up? No? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation as printed on page 63, and we have in there the additional clause that we inserted. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. It takes us to the end of the Planning Authority, which adjourns at 6:26 p.m. and open session recommences at 6:26 p.m. We're now on page 116, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned, and there were no petitions received during the last period. So still on page 116, cash in lieu of parking for John Street Medical Centre, with a recommendation on page 119. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Glade-Wright. Councillor Midgley.
Sorry, I'm just moving this because no one else had. So I'm just moving to the report here. So, yes, the report evaluates the options providing a discounted rate for the Ochre Medical Centre, John Street, in cash of lieu of parking contribution. Can staff just give some further historical information in regards to this, please?
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. So the Medical Centre has received a DA for a minor amendment at the Medical Centre. As part of that, the staff had assessed the parking requirements and deemed that there were additional parks required. As part of that, there was a cash in lieu of parking fee levied on the operator because there was a shortfall of parking, and that was to bring them up to the required level. There had been some discounting of that already applied through the assessment process on the basis of telehealth services being provided by the operator. Since that time, the operator of John Street Medical Centre have approached council under the fees and charges policy around sort of the waiving or subsidising those charges. The policy provides for above $1,500 that it's under the delegation of the Chief Executive to make a determination on that. However, given the quantum of this, I felt it was appropriate to bring it to Council for a decision on whether or not further subsidy is should be applied to the operator. The operator has provided their, I guess, appeal or bid to council for a subsidy against those fees and charges of the cash in lieu parking policy on the basis of community benefit associated with the medical services that they provide. So there's a detailed report that goes through a number of areas, including the risks associated with making a decision of this sort, but have brought it to council for a decision.
Thank you. Thank you. So just with the historical of this, at the currently there is enough adequate parking there, and I guess because they have that extra parking at the back of the centre, it is adequate.
Mr Stewart.
Now.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So the analysis that the team did at the time of the amendment to the DA was that the centre was 5 car parks short of requirement, and that was then discounted back to 4 car parks that were charged under the cash in lieu of parking policy.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I think it's a reasonable and it is an important service to the community, so I am happy to support this.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to be convinced a bit harder, please, because it is... So just so I understand, as it says in Clause 4.3, the total amount that we were talking about was $82,110, and so a 25% subsidy on that would be... I'm trying to think of a better use of the term... Well, subsidy is the word, but one could say a gift or a benefit provided of $20,527 to the OCA... Medical Centre on John Street. Are my figures right that we're talking about a $20,500 subsidy to that business?
Maths is not my strong point, so I should not be the one answering that. The CEO.
I haven't got the calculator out, but yes, it would. My ballpark maths is it's just over $20,000.
Yeah, thank you. So obviously, medical centres are a good thing. They're absolutely critically important, and also I think it's a timely moment to say that we need more of them, and Tasmania's healthcare system in general could be improved, and kudos to the amazing workforce that is doing an amazing job despite many challenges. But my perspective here is that we're basically asking for the community to subsidise that parking, whereas this business, because this business won't. Now, I think it should be as a general rule, about capacity to pay rather than about how good the business is. Because I would argue, you know, there's a lot of businesses that are doing really great things for the community. We love those businesses. Just think of your favourite coffee shop or your favourite dentist or your favourite, you know, you name the business that's in Kingborough that you love to patronise. So if we start making judgment calls about who gets the $20,000 gift and who doesn't, I think it's quite precarious. And my preference would be if a business says we don't have capacity to pay or this will significantly impact our ability to do business on this site, that to me would be a better calculus for deciding to give that gift. So I am still... I don't really want to flag which way I'm going to go on this one because I'm very open-minded, and I just really do want to be convinced why it is that a $20,000 gift from the ratepayer, if they... Can I please have some indication of if they do have capacity to pay? Because that kind of will impact my decision, because if they've got plenty of cash flow and if the business is a very viable, good business and they were going to stay here anyway, then I just think we really need to unpack that.
Thank you. CEO. I think there might be too many lights on.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. So capacity to pay hasn't been part of the analysis on this. The criteria under the policy that the applicant, the assertion that they made to council was it was on the basis of community benefit that they were making that claim under the policy. So, we don't have an analysis of their capacity to pay as part of this. So I'm unfortunately unable to provide you that.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I will just open the... I'd like to hear my colleagues' opinions when it comes to the notion of community benefit. I'll just reiterate that, you know, a local community cafe has enormous community benefit. The local dentist, enormous community benefit. The local... insert any name of any really good business that's doing great stuff for Kingborough residents, So they are, this setting a precedent here, they are going to come to us as well and say, well, you did it for a medical centre. Well, we're a chiropractor. What about us? We are, you know, like there's a million other businesses that, that should get it based on community benefit. So that's why I reiterate that I think the test should be capacity to pay and hardship provisions as opposed to the test being, well, just because you're doing a great thing for the community. There's a lot of businesses doing great stuff for the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next I had Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Gladrat.
Thank you, Mayor. Regarding 2.1, I'm trying to understand the connection between, and forgive me if I'm a bit thick, that the addition of two consulting rooms then amounts to the loss of or compensation for four car parking spaces. Can someone help me understand the connection between that?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. So it's quite complex, the background of calculating the deficit in parking. So our staff had to refer back to the number of parks approved in the previous approval and then the existing park spaces at the facility and whether that was in deficit or not, which it wasn't, and then the requirements under the current scheme. And there was, you know, that had to be calculated with all of those with all of those considerations. So we're very confident that the deficit was five spaces, considering all the different things that had to be taken into account with those with that calculation. And then a relaxation of one space was given in accordance with the performance criteria in the scheme.
Okay. So that I can understand and the community who's watching this can understand as well, when we add an extra consulting room to a business like this, in this case two, there's going to be a loss of parking to other people who want to use the space, and therefore there needs to be a compensation because those, it increases the number of patients who use the parking area. Is that the logic?
So under the security... through you, Mayor, under the scheme, for a medical centre, then the current scheme, there needs to be, for intensification of a medical centre, there needs to be five spaces per health professional providing services. So that's your starting point. You then need to look at the spaces that are already provided in accordance with the professionals providing health services, and then in this case we also had to refer back to the previous permit and what was approved for the previous permit.
I see.
Councillor Antoli.
I see, okay. I agree with the author of this proposal's view that a 25% discount is fair. I think they provide a valuable service. No disrespect to chiropractors that I see once a month. I think doctors provide a more life-changing value than chiropractors, and I'm happy to rank them slightly above. I know it might offend somebody out there, and I think especially that they look after the number of elderly people as well at that particular practice. My sainted mother goes there, which does not sway my opinion either way, but I know that a lot of elderly people go there, and I'm in favour of voting for it based on the way that the author's written the report.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Next, I've got Councillor Gladrat.
Thank you. I think ranking community benefit is irrelevant. I think the reason that I am convinced with this report is because they submitted a traffic impact assessment, which included a parking demand survey, and they noted that because they have changed their services, a lot of it to telehealth, it means there's a 25% decrease on the number of people physically attending the practice, and that is the reason that I will be supporting this. It's got nothing to do with capacity to pay or who's more beneficial to the community. I think that all those things are completely irrelevant. This really just comes down to the fact that they can demonstrate that there is a 25% decrease in the physical attendance, and therefore I will be supporting this.
Thank you. Ms. Shakuti has her light on. I feel like she wants to say something.
Sorry, I just through you, Mayor, I just need to provide some clarification that that traffic impact assessment and the fact that practice is using telehealth as well as the other relevant considerations under the scheme were considered in planners' assessment. So that has already been considered by our planning staff in assessment in determining that there was a deficit of 5 spaces.
Thank you. Councillor Mitchelly with a question, then I'll go to Councillor Dean.
Thank you. In regards to the equity concerns, and more broadly than that, have we had examples of where we have done this before?
Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Mayor, to my knowledge, we haven't made adjustments to cash in lieu of parking payments requirements under the fees discounting policy in the past. So this appeal or application came through from the applicant after the DA was issued, which included provisions around parking. They've asked for a supplementary consideration under the community benefit, but no, to my knowledge, it's never been done under this policy in the past.
Thank you. And do we know who will be parking there? Is it patients or is it the medical staff?
Mr. Stewart.
To be clear, this is about the payment of a charge to council. What council then does is considers how that the funds that we collect from cash in lieu of parking can best be provided to, support both the provision of public car parking space within the area and also for other uses like public transport, active transport, those types of things. So this isn't about directly them paying council to directly build some car parks for them, but it goes into the car parking strategy we have for that area, and then council can consider that as part of our forward program.
Councillor Mitchelly.
Thank you. And just regarding that equity concerns, if other local businesses can see that this is happening, what can we do to mitigate any future of this occurring?
Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Mayor. The cash in lieu of car parking policy isn't something that's used extensively. There aren't a large number of examples where we have we've had payments under the scheme. In terms of the provisions around equity and things like that, that's obviously a concern, as is pointed out within the paper. The benefit that's created is around access to healthcare and not providing a barrier to that. However, there hasn't been a communication plan for the other local businesses within the area, and there's not intended to be at this stage.
Next, I had Councillor Dean and then Councillor Richardson.
Thanks, Meg. So can I just check, they're actually trying to waiver the entire fee, arguing that they are providing community benefit, but we have come to the 25% reduction.
Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Mayor. So the applicant didn't specifically articulate how much they were looking for council to waive as part of this process. Certainly my read on their correspondence with myself was that they were looking for the whole amount to be waived. Certainly that was not something I was willing to recommend.
Councillor Dean.
So the community benefit really, if we're not considering it, that really has no relevance to this whatsoever, despite it being a GP in the CBD and they provide additional consulting rooms. We've just gone on purely the fact that they're putting an extra couple of consulting rooms, and due to online telehealth, we consider we've done a slight reduction because not as many people turn up anymore. It's got nothing to do with community benefit. It's just about what we've deemed is the amount of parking space they should have. They don't have them, so they have to pay.
I think I know what Ms. Shakuti's about to say, and that is that the reduction in telehealth was already taken into consideration in the previous reduction of spaces required from 5 to 4. and this is in addition. But I'll hand over to the CEO. Is that what you were going to say?
Supplementary to the Mayor's comments, and we might have other staff advice that's provided as part of this response as well. So our policy has certain criteria through which we can discount our fees and charges that we provide. Under that, the applicant has suggested that the area that they identified as being the appropriate criteria for the consideration of this was around the fact that they provide a community benefit and availability of accessible medical services is an important community service.
Councillor Dean.
So in which cases have we applied a community benefit waiver for a business or anything where they've had to provide additional parking?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. I'm not aware of... If the question was about parking, I'm not aware of any that we have ever provided that for in the past. In terms of other fees and charge reductions that we have provided, look, I'm not consciously aware of any that of a similar quantum to this or of a... there's probably no analogous example of this, which is one of the reasons that it's been brought to council for your determination.
Councillor Dean.
So just in terms of where this is at, is this actually holding up them putting up those consulting rooms? Because I noticed it was from 2023, the amendment, and it needed to be done first, but then they agreed to a payment plan or something, and then they've appealed. So are those rooms actually in and they fully operational?
Ms. Shikudi.
Through you, Mayor. The applicant has a valid planning permit to construct those rooms. They have entered into a deed for stage payment. This is simply an application for them to council to reduce the cash in lieu fees under that policy and in accordance with our fee reduction policy. So I'm not aware if it's holding them up or not, but in terms of having a valid approval, they hold that.
Councillor Dean.
Look, just a final comment. I know that there's obviously a lot of work that goes into determining, but speaking to business owners, there are sometimes outdated. It's really hard to physically determine. I mean, there were two additional consulting rooms. Will they be full-time? Will they be fully patronage? Will they always require those car spaces? It does seem like... There's no exact science to it. You can never obviously predict it, but there are some guidelines in place. But it is a significant fee, $80,000. So I'm absolutely happy with at least $25,000, 25% reduction of around $20,000. And I'm happy with the justifications it's given. If someone wanted to move it to be more, I'd be more inclined, but I don't think giving zero would be adequate given everything that's been said. Thanks to the staff.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Richardson, and then I've got Councillor Cordova on a question.
Thank you. Look, I just wanted to say that I think the outcome of this report is eminently sensible. I think as a council, anything that we can do to encourage more medical services in this, particularly in this area that we're in, where it is very difficult for people to get doctor's appointments, I think... this is a very small sacrifice for council to make in being this 25% reduction in funds that we aren't going to receive, so there's no necessarily additional cost in the short term. So, again, I think it's a eminently sensible way forward. I commend the author, and I think taking this approach is the right thing to do.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. My question was just to get a clarity on... When they did the... So what I've been hearing is that the proponent showed the traffic impact assessment proving that there was a substantial reduction in their patronage physically because they were doing the telehealth, more the telehealth. And then after that, council determined that notwithstanding the reduction in their patronage at the physical site, they were still short of the number of spaces.
Ms. Shikudi.
Through you, Mayor. That's correct. So all considerations as outlined in the scheme around that provides council the ability to relax the required number of spaces were considered in accordance with their traffic impact assessment. So traffic impact assessments are conducted by or undertaken by traffic engineers in accordance with established methodology, and that was all considered as part of the assessment of the permit. So I would say that the considering whether the deficit is adequate or the approved spaces were adequate or not is not what we need to be considering with this request. Councillors should be considering whether they want to reduce the fee due to community or for the reasons of community benefit, not because of the number of spaces provided that has already been assessed.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor. Another question is, was this a deal breaker in the sense that was the intensification of use or the expansion contingent on the proponent getting a discount or a subsidy for the parking?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor, we're not aware of whether that's the case or not.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
My final question is around the whole policy, because I think it's a good idea rather than just doing ad hoc, case by case, yes, we grant it to you, but no, we don't grant it to you. Has this moment spurred the council on to consider reducing or revisiting the cash in lieu of parking policy? Because it sounds like if we broadly think that it's too expensive right now, then we should reduce it for everyone to address that equity argument. So my question is, what has this changed about council's thinking around the whole policy as it affects all businesses in Kingra?
Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Mayor. At this stage, I don't think this application has led to any reconsideration of policy or suggested policy to come to council. At this stage, we are dealing with a singular case around a specific charge that's been levied to a company as part of their development, and a consideration under the fees exemptions and policy. There may be some precedent that a decision today might set, and that is something that council needs to consider as part of your decision making, and whether or not this becomes a more regular topic of conversation that we need to deal with might trigger further consideration around policy. The way that the cash in lieu of parking policy determines the charge is a relatively complicated formula, and I'm not going to try and articulate what that is right now, but it's basically considering what the cost of land, the development of cost of the car parking on top of that, a discount rate of 15% is applied automatically as a part of community benefit. So there's a way that's calculated based on the actual costs that would go into developing parking infrastructure to be able to support future use.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. So according to the cash in lieu parking policy, its new review date is July of 2025. So my question is, can we actually defer this discussion until we review the whole policy? Or is that also a real problem for the proponent?
CEO.
Through you, Mayor, I'd suggest that is an option. I probably wouldn't recommend it as an option. As far as I know, the medical centre is not relying on an adjustment to this, but they have made an application to council, and so we need to follow good process in the consideration of it. As to how council wants to proceed, it's fundamentally a decision for councillors about whether or not you want to provide any sort of discount or waiver to the applicant or not, or to defer this to a future date. That's a decision for yourselves.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like us to consider reducing giving a 25% subsidy to all business as part of a review of the cash in lieu policy rather than just picking favourites bit by bit. So I'm just putting that out there that we should look at the policy rather than look at individual cases. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further discussion or questions? Councillor Cordova.
May I please test the waters by making a procedural motion to defer? Is that a procedural motion? May I please?
Yep. So the procedural motion then is moved by Councillor Cordova that the matter be deferred. And do I have a seconder for that? That would appear no. So that is unsuccessful. So I'm now looking for Councillor Midgley. Did you want to sum up?
Sure, I'll make a few comments. Look, personally, I'll have to review the cash-in-lieu policy again because I don't feel like I got my head around it, really, in reading this. And it seems like there's a lot to take in and consider. I guess some of the points raised are in regards to the equity, in regards to, like, you know, the important service that medical services provide. And the monetary matters that were raised. I have come to the conclusion that I do agree with the recommendation there provided by staff, and also recalling, you know, another medical centre in southern Tasmania has closed down. So they are a really important service to our community. We know it's harder and harder to get GPs, and that medical centres definitely are struggling. But also in light of Councillor Cordova, what he said about the policy review for 2025, I guess taking this, what we have report tonight, into consideration, we come forward to reviewing that one as well. So I recommend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'll now put the motion, moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Gladright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? No. A show of hands is required. All of those in favour? Is Councillors Antoli, Fox, Dean, Midgley, Richardson, Street, Gladright and Reet, and those against, is Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. We've still got a couple of items to go and then close session, so I'm going to call an adjournment so that we have a 15-minute break, and if you've checked your emails, you'll know we're going to have a quick bite to eat and be back at 7:15. So for those watching along at home, because we've still got a fair bit to do, we're just going to have a 15-minute break. So apologies for any inconvenience. We'll be back 7:15. Welcome back. Thank you to everyone for being back promptly, and apologies to those who are watching along at home for that short break. I'll just confirm with the CEO that the recording has restarted.
Yes.
Thank you very much. We're now on page 120, Kingborough Community Safety Committee Review, with a recommendation on page 122. Looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Cordova. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. It's been an absolute pleasure chairing the Safety Committee, and I just want to give a shout out to all the committee members. It's a fine sample of our Kingborough residents, those who are willing to give up their volunteer time and have a passion for assisting council when it comes to safety-related matters, and it's been a joy working with each and every one of them. We have had a few achievements throughout the year. We've been able to get some improved signage up on the Leslie Road intersection with the Huon Highway. We participated in Road Safety Week, and we've contributed to the effective utilisation of security cameras. But despite all of our enthusiasm, I do feel that we have struggled a little bit to find our purpose within the Kingborough Council organisation, and I think the question that needs to be considered is, were the achievements possible if the committee wasn't in place? So it felt to me like we were getting a lot of service requests, and as everyone knows, service requests can be dealt with via an email to the KC email address. We also noticed that there was a little bit of potential double up. We have the Kingborough Community Consultative Forum, which takes feedback from the community. In a sense, that forum is a better place to receive safety-related feedback because the groups that attend that forum are representative of an area, of a larger group of people, whereas the safety committee, it was just six individuals. So we had a really great discussion at our last committee meeting. We considered whether we felt like we should go ahead. We presented all of our achievements and our sort of proposed opportunities, I guess, back to council staff, and council staff have taken all of that into consideration and have come up with this recommendation. So the recommendation is that the Kingborough Community Forum take on a way of receiving safety-related feedback. There's also a recommendation that we include on the council website a link for any safety-related concerns. So if you went to the website, there would be a nice, easy link, and I suppose that it would probably then just link to the normal service request email, but that's a nice, easy thing for people to find on the website. And then the continuation of collaborating with the Inspector Riley and the Tasmania Police. There was a lot of beneficial information that came from Inspector Riley, and my personal opinion is that that information is best directed to council staff directly rather than coming through a committee and then via me and then on to the council staff. So, yeah, I feel a little bit sad to be putting forward this recommendation, but I do think that it's important that we're not taking up staff's time and we're just going through the motions of meetings if there's no true purpose. So I'm really happy to hear what other people think, and if there are any questions or comments, I'm keen to find out what others think about this.
Thank you. I've got Councillor Fox and then Councillor Midgley.
I guess I'd like to provide a historical perspective. Having been on council for quite a while and having been chairman of the former Road Safety Committee, which is how it all started, and it was a partnership between State Government Department of Roads or Transport or whatever they were called at the time and councils, and we were one of the first to take up the offer, and the RACT were heavily involved as well. And it was all about education and promotion and also running events which we were able to suggest and then participate in. So it wound down from being road safety to general safety, and I think it's been a slow decline, but at the same time we should be proud of the record of having been the first and having run for this long, and the passion is still there, and a lot of the people who were involved in the beginning were involved for many, many years. So congratulations to the chair for having guided this group to this point, and I recommend and support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Fox, for the history. It's always really interesting to hear where things have come from, and thank you, Deputy Mayor, for chairing the committee, and it does mean extra time out of different council duties, so I thank you and the second chair as well for that, and also just an understanding in regards to the whys and the hows and the recommendation put forward. I note that a lot of councils have sort of safety committees, and I've always wondered why ours always seems to be so, you know, road kind of focused, whereas other council areas like Glenorchy, for example, they're much broader in regards to their kind of community safety. They do a lot of different projects under that community safety banner. And I'm wondering, did we kind of look to what other councils were doing and kind of provide that sort of to the committee around different thinking around kind of safety?
Not sure how Councillor Gladwright can answer that without contributing to the debate again, but we'll just let her do that.
Councillor Gladrott.
Thanks for that question. So, yes, at the beginning of last year, we engaged a facilitator and she attempted to help us find a bit more of what our purpose was. And, yes, we did try and broaden our thinking so it wasn't just, you know, potholes and sidewalks and things like that, that it was broader. So, yes, we did go through a process. But despite that, it still felt like it was coming back to those sort of more service request type things that were coming up.
Thanks. We are a continuous quality improvement council. Does this sort of provide a bit of thinking from staff and maybe a catalyst to kind of review our committees? And then I guess look at maybe any future gaps that we might have. Like, for example, something that I've thought about for a long time is a climate change, say, and resilience committee, which again is growing very broadly among local government councils. So I'm wondering if at all we've thought about a review and a gap and kind of where to now.
The CEO.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So it's good practice to continually be looking at the practice that we're undertaking and considering whether or not it's fit for purpose. Considering what committees we have is something that has been something I have considered. It's not an active work program at the moment to reconsider our overall committee structure or what committees we have within council. Certainly as we go through the next strategic planning period, I think it's probably an opportune time to reconsider whether or not we have the right inputs into the organisation to consider, you know, the advice that we may need from different groups of people, and then use that as a opportune time to consider whether or not there's anything else that we require. I think, yeah. So my feedback would be, yes, it has been something I have thought about. No, it's not something I'm actively doing right now, but I think there may be a time in the future.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to echo the sentiments of thanking everybody involved for their long service and contributing and volunteering is not easy, and so it's really important that we thank people who for the benefit of all of us get involved. So really thank you for all of your service, and to you, Deputy Mayor, through you, Mayor, for your work on that committee as well. I just wanted to think now about next steps. So I've always found it really valuable hearing directly from Tasmania Police, and I think there's probably broad community interest. So I just wonder. Maybe it's too early to say because there'll be a strategic planning process, I hope, but rather than a committee behind closed doors or a council behind closed doors hearing these things and then trying to disseminate what is appropriate, actually hearing directly from Tasmania Police in kind of town hall style meetings or something once a year or something, has that been thought of? Because that would, to my mind, give the community the opportunity to say what they think and what's playing on their minds, but also give the police the opportunity to really get in with those statistics and let people know what the lie of the land is. So I'm interested in any commentary around what those next steps might be.
So I have regular meetings with our police inspector, Colin Riley, and a number of our staff have regular contact with him also in relation to a range of issues. And in my most recent communications with him, because I met with a community organisation, community group the other day who raised some issues of speeding in their area. He's been actively going out and meeting with all the different community associations himself because he finds that a valuable way. So I know he's met, for example, with the Blackmans Bay Community Association. He's undertaken to meet with this group that I met with the other day. So he's more than willing to go around to, you know, each of those organisations and hear from them what their direct concerns are in their areas. So that would seem, I think, a very effective way to perhaps reach into the community. And the CEO would like to speak now.
Yeah, and just through you, Mayor. So in parallel to that, I've also drafted an agreement or I guess a a high-level document that I've shared with the district inspector and had feedback on about just sort of codifying a little bit the working agreement between police and council so that we have some guide rails that suggest how we will engage with each other, the sort of regularity of it and the terms that we will, what we will discuss in those conversations. So that can support, I guess, making sure that the ongoing links operationally between the police and council are strong. We're having the right conversation regularly and support other activities that the police are undertaking out in the community. So we're doing that in partnership.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you so much, Mayor. Initially, I'd kind of thought because the sparking conversations, igniting action, those bushfire community talks were quite popular. But actually, the more I think about it, this I'm really comforted by the fact that the Kingborough Community Forum has this really important central almost role to play in being that liaison. So I think that that's actually a really appropriate throughput and a pathway for that kind of conduit between community and the police, but also keeping the council in the loop. And I really do appreciate the CEO's input on that as well. So, look, I think when one door closes, another one opens, and I'm really pleased to see that we're an agile council that's trying to get the best out of whatever we're doing, wherever we deploy our resources, let's, you know, try and get the best out of it. So I just think that this is good practice, and I just want to once again thank everybody for the time that they've committed to this and for their genuine goodwill in trying to make Kingborough the best place it can be. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further discussion? Just before I ask the Deputy Mayor to close the debate, I just wanted to thank the volunteers who have been on this committee, you know, for turning up every couple of months to a meeting and being prepared to donate their time. I know that you know, in recent times it has been difficult to get as many people to put their hands up to be on part of this group. Look, they have achieved some things over their time. I think it sort of speaks volumes of the maturity of that group to actually understand that perhaps they don't have as clear a purpose and so to take the decision to say, look, we don't really need to exist. We think there are other avenues for this work to be done, I think is very sensible. So I just wanted to thank them and thank the Deputy Mayor and Councillor Bain, who's also not with us tonight, but who's been part of that group for their work. Councillor Gladright, would you like to sum up?
Just to echo again what I said earlier, just to thank everyone, and yes, I also didn't mention Councillor Bain, so if you're listening, Councillor Bain, thank you. And also to Anthony as well, who's the executive officer, who also spent a lot of time and work assisting me in chairing that committee. So thank you again to everybody.
Thank you. I'm going to put the recommendation now, moved by Councillor Gladright, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Before we go on to the notice of motion, I did foreshadow that we'd left off the a motion in relation to the appendices. So I'm going to put a motion that the appendices be noted. I'd be looking for a mover and a seconder for that. Got a mover in Councillor Gladright, a seconder in Councillor Fox. Are there any questions on the appendices? No?
I have a question.
Oh, thank you, Councillor Midgley.
A question in regards to, so as you can see in the KBAC minutes, you can see the link to the cycling strategy. And when we are considering, like, our budget discussions, we're going to be looking at all the different strategies. Like, will we kind of, and I guess in my thinking around that, I don't know if other councillors look at that strategy, but like many of the strategies, there's a heap of things that are on the wish list for these. So I guess, how are we going to kind of propose to review all the many strategies alongside kind of our budget? Sorry, it's a question that sparked something in the appendix.
The CEO.
Does that make sense?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, I think I understood that. So if I was to paraphrase the question, it's we have a lot of strategies with a lot of actions within them. How are we going to sort of reference them or consider them through budget conversations and prioritisation? Yeah, so it's a great question. I guess one of the things that I'm thinking about at the moment is how we can continue to bring the various actions and initiatives listed within our various guiding documents, whether they be plans, strategies, etc., into a sensible framework so that it's manageable in terms of how we provide, I guess, guidance to our staff about what's important, but also connect through to councillors so that you can sort of provide some of that prioritisation. As we know, we're in a challenging financial situation, and so a degree of prioritisation is always really important as part of that, so we can really be clear about where the important things lie. In terms of the specifics, I guess what we need to do is through the budgeting process bring the various thematic areas that we have in council through to the elected members, and we'll do that through a series of workshops that we have planned to sort of talk about, first of all, what sort of council do we want to be, and those sort of larger strategic elements, through to the conversations about making some specific decisions about the level of investment that we're going to make into different parts of the organisation. Through that, staff will try and provide policy and strategic context that feeds into those conversations, but certainly on a line-by-line basis it's going to be challenging to provide, you know, an initiative-level conversations to the level of detail whilst you're trying to make decisions across the budget of the whole of organisation. So I guess in summary, it's a challenging thing to try and do. Staff will try and provide the best advice we can through that process to enable you to see the correlation between the budgetary decisions you're making and the ability for us to implement strategic documents, understanding that we can't do everything at once.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My question relates to page 177, Silverwater Park toilet replacement, so that's in the infrastructure works report. My question actually is around public art, and periodically people will talk about having murals, and I know the City of Launceston just enhanced their public amenities by having murals on the side of their public toilets. My question is, are those kit toilets that are, for example, the ones in Silverwater Park and the new ones that we're getting in, are they able to have public art on them? And if they are able to have public art on them, how does that relate to our art and culture strategy? Like, is there some kind of alignment of arts and culture strategy with a public, with our toilet strategy?
Mr. Reeve.
Murals on
lucky
toilets.
You.
Thank you, Mayor. I haven't spoken tonight, so it's a great opportunity to answer a very challenging question. I guess it's sort of a bit of a lead on from the question that Councillor Midgley asked in terms of our strategies there and how they all link together. So it is important that we actually have a look at those, because you're right, there is various different strategies there and they do have some linkages. The public art strategy there doesn't specifically go down into those details of, you know, locations and the details of actually saying we'll look at putting murals on our toilets or any other particular facility as such. It does talk about a number of other things there. And the toilet strategy tends to deal a lot more with, the condition, capacity, functionality and so forth. Yes, so certainly the amenity is part of that, and I guess it's probably not a step that's actually been looked at in great detail in terms of, you know, whether that is a priority for us to actually look at that as part of a construction project. So we tend to, for particularly some of the toilets that sit out in, I guess, areas away from the urban areas, they tend to be kit toilets, if you like. There's certainly the capacity to retrofit or look at art that might go with those toilets. I'd probably add as well that Silverwater Park toilet is obviously adjacent to the park, where we're also doing quite a bit of work there with the playground and other bits and pieces as well, which has been workshopped fairly exhaustively with the community. So there's some elements that actually sit within that park area as well at the same time. So I guess it's a very long-winded answer to say not at this stage, but it's something that I guess could be looked at in the future.
Any further discussion? If not, I will put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Gladwright, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to notices of motion. Councillor Dean has submitted a notice of motion headed Infrastructure Projects, and there is an officer's response from Mr Stewart. So moved by Councillor Dean. I'm looking for a seconder. Seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Look, given the officer's response, I'm hoping that's going to be a fairly straightforward motion. What I've put forward is as two parts. First, for there to be a review into the Council's handling of two projects, the bus stop and the Summerlees Road underpass. But more importantly tonight is to ensure that the findings of that review are brought back to Council for us to consider. I won't go in to describe those projects. I think our residents are familiar with what's gone there with those delays. And I think in the first instance it's worth pointing out that the priority is to get those projects completed as soon as possible, and I'm looking forward to getting an update from relevant staff in a moment. And it was also obviously really good to see some of these road underpass, or the road, sorry, opened up just before Christmas. And would like to also understand what's happening in the next few months in regard to the bus stop. At the same time as making sure they're being completed, I think it is important that we understand why there have been such challenges in those projects and, as a council, how we might improve things moving forward, as particularly given the amount of investment that's about to come into the community and the amount of additional projects, whether directly related or indirectly, from the high-performance centres. I think it's really important that we get our ducks lined up and provide that level of assurance to the community that we're doing everything we can. You know, ensuring systems and processes moving forward is absolutely critical, I think, and the community deserve to know that we're owning up to mistakes, if we've made them, if we haven't made them, to fully understand what's gone on so that they've got full confidence in us, I suppose, to be able to deliver those projects moving forward. So while the report, obviously, or the response, I should say, points out from the CEO that this review is already underway, I did consider, having spoken to CEO, whether we should just keep this in or just leave it out. I did decide to keep it in because I think there are some relevant points by having it in and having it passed, which I hope it will pass. I guess first point is about putting on record that we are committed to acknowledging what our role was, figuring out what we can do better, and then putting those improvements in place moving forward. And secondly, it's about adding a level of accountability to ensure that a report will come back to Council in coming months. So that's very it in a brief nutshell. Before I hand over to anyone that wants to make a comment, if we could just get an update on those two and also about the review that's referred to in the response that's already underway.
Mr Stewart.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So broad question, so an update on the two projects. So obviously Summerlees Road is now open. It's got a temporary seal surface there, and so it's basically not the final surface that will be applied. The contractors are in the process of finishing off that work, but not on the road area itself. So they'll do that with traffic management, keeping Summerlees Road open through that process. Once that project is complete, then the final seal surface will be laid, and that job will be complete, and the road will be fully functional. In regard to the bus interchange, we received correspondence from the Department of State Growth late last year, confirming that the design that we had been working with them backwards and forth on was one that they would operate on. They did note within that correspondence that it may not have the full capacity that they might want in the future around expansion of bus services. So that is something that we will need to continue to work with the Department of State Growth on. In saying that, I'd suggest that it has as much capacity as many on-street bus stops would have. So I don't think that process has been, that design or the minor design changes have been agreed to by the department. We're in the process of seeking quotations from the market at the moment. In regard to the review, review scope was drafted last year. It was taken to the market and we agreed to a consultant to do that work, and a kick-off meeting has already occurred for the review of those two projects as part of that process.
Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm supportive of the motion and I'm pleased to be able to second it. I think that in our pursuit to keep the community at the heart of everything we do, a big part of that is obviously delivering on our commitments and also delivering on quality infrastructure. And this is, I think, a logical and natural extension of that is to maintain high standards of accountability and therefore undertake periodic reflections and reviews of the work that we did in order to make sure that we have infrastructure development that is befitting of a community that is growing in population, and that all of our decisions are underpinned by strategic planning. So I think that this is a good move, and I'm pleased to hear that the report that will be provided, if I understand correctly, is essentially an independent review. So it's not just the council looking at itself and saying, well, where can we improve? We're already doing that. We have continuous improvement policies in place, but I think it really is good to have an outside pair of eyes as well looking in and providing advice there. So I'm going to, I guess, withhold the fullness of my comments until I see what that report says, but just to say that in terms of strategic planning, I think it's always good to constantly be reflecting on what we did, looking at it, providing high standards of accountability, and to get those independent set of eyes on it, I think can only be a good thing as well. So I commend the motion.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I've got a few questions for our leadership and also for Councillor Dean. My first is, I understand, Mayor, that you've made public comments saying that a review is happening and will happen. Is that right, or have I got that wrong?
No, that's correct. I've been on the public record many times on nearly every radio station that I've done interviews on or spoken to the media on this about, that I was very clear that this was not meeting community expectations in the way that these projects are rolled out, and that we would be doing a review. So I have been very clear on that.
Mm. And if council officers clarify, I believe it was several months ago that the CEO preemptively, without being asked to do it, told us that he likewise wasn't happy and he was going to seek an independent review. Is that correct?
The CEO. I'm not 100% clear on his time frame, so I'll get him to address that part.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, I've indicated a number of times that we would be undertaking a review. I think it's incumbent on us to make sure that we're looking at ourselves and projects that we undertake to learn from them, whether they've gone well or not, about the things that have gone well, the things that haven't, and making sure that we're adopting a continuous improvement and making sure that if there are mistakes that have been made, that we take them on board and we incorporate improvements into the work that we do. So certainly as early as late August last year, that was something that I was talking about, and we've made public statements to the effect from around September last year onwards.
Thank you. And through you, Mayor, if I may ask Councillor Dean a couple of questions. Was Councillor Dean aware that both the CEO and the Mayor have publicly and privately told us that this review was happening?
I assume so, because Councillor Dean was at meetings where I have articulated that, because we've been asked questions by members of the community and other councillors, and I've always answered with that as part of my response.
Is that Councillor Dean's position, though? I don't want to assume he knew that this was all happening.
I'm not really sure what the question is alluding to.
The question is, were you aware that the Mayor has made public statements that a review was happening and that the CEO told us months ago a review was happening?
Look, until I met with the CEO in the new year, I had no idea that the review was being done independently. There was mention of reviews, sure, but this was formalising the fact that a review was happening. Now I've learnt that, as of this year, that it's an independent review. Fantastic. I'm not sure what else to say.
Okay,
there've been some comments made about a review potentially happening. This is just to formalise a review is happening, great, and we as councillors and the community get a report back with summarising that review.
My follow-up question, and you just answer it as you see fit. There's no need for you to give me an answer I want to hear, just as you see fit. My other question through you, Mayor, is Councillor Dean mentioned before that he this will help keep the process or the CEO, I couldn't remember exactly how he said it, accountable. Could he explain what he meant by that? And is he aware that there was some sort of weakening or withdrawal of the position to do a review that he would use the word accountability, keep him accountable?
Councillor Dean.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, providing a report to council so that we can, and I think it probably hasn't been answered by the CEO and maybe misunderstood, the report, and maybe it's a question, the report itself is not going to be released to the public, but I wanted to have a summary of the findings so that they were made public to us to consider and for the public to also have eyeballs on those. So I can't see an issue with making sure that we as a council get a report.
Councillor Antolik.
And may I ask through you, Mayor, if the CEO has a problem with making summary of findings public?
The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. No, I have no problem making a summary of those findings public.
And can I ask whether or not it might have been your original intention to make them public or you hadn't thought about it?
Through you, Mayor, I don't believe I publicly articulated that that was my intent. However, a number of times I have referenced the fact that we would be doing that. I might have assumed that it was implicit that we would talk about the findings once we had them, but I don't think I'd explicitly said that they would be public.
Councillor Antolik.
Thank you, Mayor. From my point of view, I suppose the thing about this that I find the most problematic is actually the last paragraph in background. The intention of this motion is to ensure a review is undertaken and that its key findings are made available to help restore the community's confidence in the council's capacity to manage and deliver the major projects. I don't have any issue with the fact that the key findings should be made public. I would support that. And because we do want to make sure that the community is confident that we can undergo major projects, it's 50%, 70%, 60%, whatever's the figure of what we do. I suppose I'm struggling with this idea that this motion is going to create a review, something that was promised would happen months ago, both publicly and privately, and I'm trying to understand why then is this motion being put forward for us to support when I want to support a motion that is necessary, and I don't see this as necessary at all. And I'm wondering if Councillor Dean could answer that concern of mine.
Councillor Dean.
You're more than happy to not support it. It's a very straightforward motion to conduct a review and to provide a report. You can amend it, you cannot support it. That's clearly up to you. It's a very simple and straightforward motion to confirm what comments have been made about a potential a review. Great, we hear that it's happening, fantastic. Hopefully in a few months' time, it's not going to hold up the project, obviously, but hopefully in a few months' time we'll have that before us so that moving forward we can do things a bit better. I really don't see why that's controversial, but it's completely up to members here to not support that or to amend. I really don't have much. I don't know why I'm answering all these questions. It's a very straightforward motion.
If I can ask my question again, why does the author of this NOM feel it's necessary given that it's been promised that it would happen?
Councillor Dean. Yeah, I'll have to put your microphone on because I can't hear what you're saying.
I'm just not going to keep saying the same thing. There was comments made about a review. That's what we've heard. Ad hoc, as you've asked questions about the bus stop interchange, there have been signals that we might do a review. I've not had anything in front of me as a councillor that provides assurance to the community that 100% that we would get a report of that review, and that's what this does. It's really not that controversial, but I don't know what else to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at least that's an answer. I appreciate that. Saying that I can take it or leave it and not answer the question is not an answer of the question, but at least you've answered that you wanted to make sure more than anything that it's made public. Right. Okay. And we've gotten that assurance from the CEO anyway. From my point of view, I want to actually support NOMs that are that are necessary. I don't see this as necessary. I don't understand why it's being put forward in whole, given that I seem to be aware that we were going to have it independently done, and I actually got the impression, wrongly so, that it was going to be made, the summary findings were going to be made public. So at this stage, I'm not feeling inclined to support this because it's going to happen anyway. It's been publicly said it would happen anyway, and I don't really understand why the councillor would want to say in this NOM that he's responsible for making it happen by putting this NOM forward when it was going to happen anyway. So it, to me, it's all a bit confusing and comes across as if someone is trying to take credit for someone else's work. So I won't be supporting it because it's not necessary. It's going to happen anyway.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Fox.
I'm feeling a bit unsure about the scope of this review because Council's not the only group of people involved in this. We've had consultants, we've had our own staff, but there are also government departments, Metro.
Sorry, the microphone again.
We don't have the capacity to review their processes and how they interact with us. Now, whether the consultant has that ability, I don't know. I just feel it's possibly going to put us in a worse light than is possibly the case, and we would have no way of contradicting that because we'd only have part of the information. I'm trying to be careful what I say because we're not in committee, but I would, if there are any comments that need to be made in committee, I would prefer that this matter went into committee.
Thank you. The CEO should be able to respond to your concerns.
Through you, Mayor, in terms of the scope of works that we're looking at, I think it's appropriate that we consider what is in within our control as part of these projects. This is not in any way a witch hunt. This is not in any way trying to point fingers at anyone, ourselves or other agencies or bodies. The intent of this work is to learn from it, is to be able to take, insights that we've got about where things mightn't have gone as well as we would like and make sure that we're incorporating them into future practice. So it's not intended to come out with an outcome and saying so-and-so or this organisation held responsibility here. It's really about the spirit of continuous improvement and making sure that we are understanding how we can continue to enhance our processes to make sure that we can be the best we can be in terms of the delivery of these types of projects in the future.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So, yes, it is a simple motion, an interesting discussion. I kind of come to the conclusion that it could have just been a question at a council meeting versus actually a motion when we are already doing something. And that question would then solidify the fact of, yes, we are doing it, and can that be made public? Yes, it, you know, can it come to a council meeting? Yes, it can be. So, you know, I can support it in regards to just that it's happening as we're doing it anyway, but I guess when we're putting forward these motions, if we are wanting to gloss, to take the glory that we are doing that, it is actually already happening. And I think that the community loud and clear can kind of see that. But yeah, next time it could just be a question.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Further comment? Look, I'll just add my remarks. I agree, Councillor Midgley, with what you've suggested. I think our agendas are long enough without putting notices of motion up. As much as I appreciate the intent of the notice of motion, I think that, if we start bringing notices of motion for work that's already underway as a precedent, then we are going to really be putting resources into things that we don't need to be. So I guess we just bear that in mind in future when we're drafting things. And had I been asked that specific question about it being public, I would have happily answered that, as would the CEO. But I appreciate the intent behind Councillor Dean putting this forward, and I'll leave my comments at that. So, Councillor Dean, would you like to sum up?
Sure. It's the discussion's not exactly landed how I thought it would. I thought it would just be support for, as the CEO's pointed out, moving on, learning from it and doing a bit better. Not going to try and take credit for a review I'm not even doing, but I have learnt that it's an independent review, that we're not doing it ourselves, and this is a formal motion, which isn't just a question. I take the point, but it's not just a question. We actually all here have to support the idea that a report will come to us, which has happened to many times, decisions that we agree that we want to see your report. As a councillor, I want to see your report, and that's all it is. There's not much more to add. I hope it gets support, but yeah, there's not much more to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to put the motion now, moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? A show of hands is required. All those in favour? It's Councillors Fox, Cordova, Dean, Midgley, Street, Bladewright and Reet. And those against? Councillors Antoli. Hello, Councillor Richardson. Councillor Richardson, the motion is carried. That now takes us to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that, in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority moves into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, tender assessment AB2407, Civic Centre HVAC system upgrade, and closure of part of the LGA subdivision road intersecting Channel Highway and Pin Oak Place, comprised in folio of the register volume 160038, folio 100. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. In accordance with Kingborough Council's meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So thank you to everyone who has been watching along at home for our first meeting of 2025.